Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 80 of the Attractions Podcast. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Seth.
And we are here to talk to you about the latest and greatest in theme park news and more, as well as what's going on in our own lives. Seth, how have you been
this week? I have been great. I kind of won the lottery twice this week. Ooh. I am not rich, but on the same day, I managed to both get boarding pass group number for Rise of the Resistance at Hollywood Studios and a COVID vaccine appointment at the Orange County Convention Center.
Woo!
And I think the COVID vaccine appointments lasted about 30 seconds longer than the Rise of the Resistance passes, but it was pretty close. So I must have done something right in a former life, definitely not in this one, to deserve that.
Maybe you should have bought a lottery ticket.
So yes, a Tuesday, I get my first jab in the arm at the Orange County Convention Center. It's kind of weird because I've been there for MegaCon and I've been there for Star Wars Celebration, but I've never been there for a life-saving medical appointment. So there's something new.
Yeah, well, we'll get to see you in the aftermath of your first and second doses.
We'll see how it goes. luckily, they should be midweek, so I've got plenty of time to recover before recording. And well, my wife made it through her round. She got hers a little while ago, so hopefully I will survive too.
Yeah, from what I've talked with friends, if you had COVID, your first dose is usually the one that is rough. Mm. But if you haven't had it, it's your second dose that'll really get you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And other than that, we introduced our kittens to their very first laser pointer.
Ooh.
So RIP anything breakable in my living room. But it's like the coolest remote controlled car or drone, except, you know, because you can kind of guide them around, but they still sort of have a mind of their own, and sometimes skid right into the furniture, which is
aww,
really adorable. So, and how was your week?
My week has been good. Brody finished his school training sessions last week, so we had to say goodbye to his trainer. We fondly call her Treat Lady because Brody won't do anything unless he gets paid in treats. He's too smart about it. He's like, I will only do it if I see that snack in your hand. And then we've just been hanging out. I finally felt motivated enough to start doing the chores that I've neglected since getting vaccinated. So that was
I think getting vaccinated is a perfectly legitimate excuse to take a little vacation.
You know? Right?
Absolutely, 100%. Milk that.
Well, you know, I did get this passport holder in the mail. that I ordered like a year ago before all of this went down. Now it's just a sad reminder that I can't go out of the country.
Well, or optimistic.
That
we are on the bad side, you know, we're past the worst of it and there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. But other than that, it's just been same old this time around, just kind of counting the days until I can get out of the house.
With the kind of months you've had, as long as there's no natural disaster, that count as a win, right?
Right, it's a good week. But without any further ado, let's get into the news, because there's a lot.
Oh my lord, yes, it's a big week.
A big week. We're going to run through these first two a little fast because they're basically the same thing. Six Flags Great Adventure and Six Flags Great America have announced opening dates for their spring season. Six Flags Great Adventure will be open daily for spring operation starting yesterday when we're recording this, March 27th through April 11th. And then we'll resume regular daily operation for the summer on May 27th. And then Six Flags Great America is set to open on April 24th. And Hurricane Harbor Chicago will reopen on May 29th.
Shout out to my original home park in New Jersey.
Whoa.
A great adventure. And I believe that the Six Flags in California will be the first California theme park operating with rides at the beginning of April. So, yeah, Six Flags is definitely being aggressive in opening their parks across the country. So I'm sure their employees are happy to get back to work.
Yeah, always a good sign. I love seeing places announce opening dates and safety guidelines. That's also important. If you are a Florida driver, you can get some cool car swag with the Walt Disney World license plate for the 50th anniversary and also the first ever official Walt Disney World license plate.
I got to admit, I have never been a huge fan of sending extra money to the government for anything. Like, I don't look at my own license plate, right? Because I'm driving my car. I can't see my own license plate. So I've never been tempted before now to spend extra money on a license plate. If I was going to, I think this comes out to, it's $25 plus fees. So it's like $33. I'm really tempted because this one looks pretty nice. You know, the only thing is that I feel like, you know, as a journalist, it would be, you know, kind of like it should show bias. Like, if you know, if you show up at Universal in the Universal Parking Garage or SeaWorld with a Walt Disney World plate, like, you know, I don't want to risk getting keyed or anything.
Yeah, so this is why you need multiple plates and a drill in the back of your car.
Or like a James Bond had on his car, you know, where it could just flip the license plate over. And absolutely. But it does look sharp. It's got this dark blue and iridescent color scheme that we're seeing used throughout the 50th anniversary marketing campaign, similar to how they've repainted the entry arches coming into the resort. And I think the best part, of course, is that the fee goes to the Make-A-Wish of Central Florida. And obviously they do amazing work for, you know, kids who are critically ill and granting wishes to come to the Orlando area.
Yeah. Now every time I look at this license plate story after the Suicide Squad trailer came out, I think of you have personalized license plates, you die. Can't wait for that to come out. Main Street Confectionery at Magic Kingdom is getting a facelift for the 50th anniversary. Very exciting.
Yeah, we really don't know a lot about what the specifics are of it, but I think that this, you know, the candy shop on Main Street is kind of a must visit for me on the way out. Like, I've got to pick up a Rice Krispie treat in the shape of Mickey's head for my wife every time I visit. It's just like mandatory. but the shop has been kind of stale for a number of years. There once upon a time, remember, there was a moving conveyor belt in the ceiling back when it was Goofy themed, and that's been gone forever. And I think it's time for it to be refreshed along with the hat shop or the chapeau.
The chapeau.
Which adjoins it. So, yeah. Luckily, you will still be able to find most of the items inside at other locations around the park during the refurbishment.
Yeah. I think I saw on Twitter today that they had already started taking the embroidery machines out of the chapeau. Mm-hmm. So, they're moving right along. And if you need treats in the meantime, don't sleep on Big Top. Okay? Go to Big Top in Fantasyland and get some snacks. They have good stuff back there.
Yep, excellent selection.
They're also putting gold leaf on various attractions in Fantasyland, which I think is crazy, but I'm sure it'll look great.
You know, a little extra bling can't hurt. I'm sure it will be completely tasteful, because when has Disney ever done anything for an anniversary that was not 100% tasteful?
Exactly.
Really, 5th anniversary birthday cake.
Hey, I kind of like the birthday cake castle. I know that
you're
that's
so
like...
Young. You're so young. I know. I know. It's
okay. It's cute. All right. Nevertheless, Disney Cruise Line is starting to set back out to sea, at least in a staycation-y kind of way for guests in the UK. They are offering short staycation cruises this summer to get around the CDC's ruling about banning cruise ships from docking in U.S. ports with the Disney Magic. So
yeah, you're seeing a lot of cruise lines getting creative this year because they can't go in and out of the U.S. They've been going out a lot of Caribbean islands. But this one makes me jealous. I once did a transatlantic crossing on the Magic from Europe to Florida with a bunch of really great British folks. And I can imagine that this would be a lot of fun, one of these British staycation trips. This is being marketed and sold to UK residents, and I'm not 100% clear on what the restrictions are on Americans going to the UK right now, but I'm pretty sure it's not something that they're encouraging. So this is something, as much as I'd love to book,
right?
I don't think it's a good idea right now, whether or not I've got my vaccine. But boy, I wish I could go on that, because that sounds like a great trip.
Yeah. And just like with other parks announcing their dates, this does feel hopeful to see some kind of resurgence of the cruise industry this year, maybe.
It's going to be rough. I think the cruise industry will be slower to recover than others until there's a critical mass of people who are vaccinated. But if the cruises can, you know, guarantee that everyone on the cruise, everyone working on the cruise, everyone visiting the cruise has been fully vaccinated, then that could actually prove really attractive. And I think that once cruises do start filling up, then it will be hard to find an empty cruise for a long time. Once people are ready to go back, watch those prices soar.
Great. I've never even been on a cruise. So you would think now would be a great time.
Well, you know, those people who, I guess, booked during the closure or before and had vacations that got bonuses for the cancellation, those people are very lucky right now, because I think when cruising does bounce back, then until a lot of these new boats come online, there's going to be more demand than supply.
Mm-hmm. Over at Disney's Animal Kingdom, they are gearing up to celebrate Earth Month starting April 18th.
Earth Day is not enough. We need a whole Earth Month.
A whole Earth Amen. Month. guests visiting the park from April 18th through the 24th will be able to enjoy a few different experiences. Limited time.
18th to the 24th. That's that doesn't not a sound month. Like a whole month to me. It's barely a week.
Earth half. That's a, what's yes. Is there a word for a half that's of a week?
That's a business week.
Earth business week. Some of these offerings that they will be having include exclusive character appearances, learning opportunities with animal specialty merchandise, themed food and beverages, which is always a enticing offer, new Wilderness Explorers activity, and more.
The Wilderness Explorer activity is kind of exciting. That's kind of like, I think, a cult hit of Animal Kingdom. That's one of those things that I think a lot of people overlook. And I don't know if they've added much new to it in the last few years. So that's a cool addition.
Yeah, I think I could be wrong, but I feel like they haven't added anything since they opened Pandora.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's neat. I'm going to have to check that out and get my passport, little Wilderness Explorer badge stamp.
Yes. I want to see a video of you doing the the ka-ka thing. And then if you head over to the animation experience, you can draw various characters like Dumbo, Turk, Squirt, Shere Khan, Simba, and Scar as part of like a conservation tie-in, which would be nice.
I think that's great, but I'm a little disappointed that apparently Raya the Last Dragon is already getting shoved out the door, because I got to draw Baby Tuk Tuk. And I haven't even seen the movie. Don't plan to until it's free. But Baby Tuk Tuk already has won my heart. And I think it's a shame that he's already getting booted out of the animation experience.
Sad. And then there's also some cute cupcakes. That bumblebee honeybee cupcake looks delicious. I wonder if it's actually honey flavored.
Oh, you know, way back when at the there's a Winnie the Pooh themed, or there was, quick service restaurant in Critter Country at Disneyland. And there was a time when they had a honey cupcake that looked kind of similar to that and was delicious. So if it's anywhere close, I'm going to have to definitely check that one out.
And then if you are a pin collector, you'll be able to pick up a limited edition 2021 Earth Day Tefiti Moana pin. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. If it's anything like previous years, they'll be gone 10 minutes into park open.
Yeah.
And then various other merchandise offerings will be available from Island Mercantile. PhotoPass will be showing special Earth Day backgrounds and magic shots with a brand new photo op that they haven't said what it is yet. But there will be a new one.
Exciting.
Yeah. This I've been waiting for a minute. I knew this was going to happen. I knew it. And I've just been waiting. Disney has announced that Black Widow, Cruella, and Luca from Pixar will now be releasing day and date on Disney Plus, as well as releasing in theaters.
And I believe all three of these are going to be Disney Plus. What do they call it? Disney Plus Extra. It's not included in Disney Plus, but you got to pay the extra $29.99, like for Mulan.
Yes. Yeah. So Cruella and Black Widow will be Disney Plus Premier okay. Access.
Premier Access. That's, thank you. Yeah. I forgot my lingo.
And if you want to know, it's $30 per movie. Mm. But Luca will be offered for free.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So they also pushed back the release date for Black Widow. So now Black Widow will be releasing on Friday, July 9th. Cruella will be releasing on Friday, May 28th. And Disney and Pixar's Luca will be released for free on Friday, June 18th.
I'm just waiting for definitive proof that Black Widow actually exists as a movie. And that right. They didn't just make a really expensive trailer and they were like, oh, shoot, we didn't actually get around to making the movie. Let's keep delaying this.
Well,
it's possible. I mean, it's as likely as any other explanation. This might set the record for, like, you know, big budget movie being delayed the most times.
I feel like
actually being completely canceled.
I feel like Bond, No Time to Die, is probably like neck and neck with Black Widow.
Neck and neck. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But it's interesting because from what I've been seeing online, I don't know if Disney releases actual figures or not, but most of the entertainment journalists I follow say that Raya did not make as much money through Premier Access as Mulan did, which is a shame because it's a better movie.
Yeah.
But I guess they feel like they don't have a choice in the matter, but it's interesting to see them move to this day and date model for these films because Chapek was literally like 2 days prior to this announcement saying we're still doing theaters. Mm-hmm. We're going to push it till the last minute before we decide to release it digitally, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, if I was the owner of a movie theater chain, I probably wouldn't be thrilled about this announcement.
No,
but you know, I think it's going to be a while before movie-going audiences come back to their, they might never ever come back to their previous peak.
Yeah.
You know, the people have gotten used to watching stuff from their couch, and you know, I'm sure if Disney sees that they make about as much money in their own pockets total from doing this, you know, day and date release at both home and in a theater, then you know, maybe the box office totals will never be what they used to be. You know, you're never going to have another Avatar, you know, that's going to reach that, you know, or Endgame that's going to reach that kind of global total. But once you add in the money direct from video, then as long as the studio is making their cut, then they're happy to undermine the movie theaters in the long run.
Yeah.
So yeah, if Black Widow well under this model, that's not a healthy sign for like AMC and Cinemark.
Yeah, this will be Disney's, I guess if you don't consider Raya and Mulan tent poles, this is their first like really big tent pole experiment with this Premier Access model. So it'll be interesting because Cruella will, jury's still out on whether or not that will be good. But Black Widow is something that would have pulled big numbers just because it's a Marvel movie. So it'll be interesting to see how many people will actually pay for it to watch it at home or just say, I'll wait 3 months and then it'll come out.
And I'm absolutely sure that if for whatever reason Black Widow does not do as well as people think it could have or should have, then it will all get blamed on a woman. That's at least on the internet, that will all come down. It's all her fault.
Yeah.
Because that's where we are these days. So.
Yeah. Along with these announcements, they have also shuffled around some release dates. These new dates and movies are Free Guy has been moved to August 13th, 2021. That's the Ryan Reynolds video game random character movie. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings has been moved to September 3rd. It was originally supposed to come out in the summertime. The King's Man's coming out on December 22nd, 2021. Deep Water, I believe. What is that one? I thought my brain was like, it's the whale thing that James Cameron is doing, but I don't think that's right. Nope. And then Death on the Nile has been pushed to February 11th, 2022 is what that should say. Typo on my part. That was supposed to come out around Thanksgiving, but they're not just all of this, but there have been some other things going on with the stars of that film that you can look into for yourself.
Google it.
That's all I'm going to say. Over at Aquatica Orlando, Riptide Race has finally got an opening date, and it's next week.
I got an invite. I'm double booked, so I'm not gonna make it.
No.
You didn't really need to see video of me in a bathing suit riding this one, but it sure does look fun. It's two side by side tubes that you ride a raft with. It's kind of a family toboggan style sled where you've got someone sitting right behind you. And it's mostly enclosed, so if you're claustrophobic, if you're not into those enclosed tubes, it might not be great for you. But it does look like a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, it opens on April 3rd, and it's got a height requirement of 42 inches. So almost everyone, if you've got kids, will be able to ride and race each other.
Yeah, not too terrifying.
No drop floors, straight downs, just lots of turns and spins. I can't wait to see video of it. Looks like a lot of fun. Over at Universal Orlando, you just got the biggest smile on your face.
This makes me so happy.
The former Universal Studios store has now been transformed and is still transforming into Universal Legacy Store.
So we've talked before about how they're building a big new Universal Studios store with all the kind of modern current merchandise taking up a big portion of what used to be CityWalk's retail. And there have been a lot of rumors about what was going to happen to the original studio store. If it was going to be a restaurant, if it was going to be a bar, who knows? This implies to me that they're planning on keeping this around a while because they've put some real great design work into the interior of this. Every day I go in, there's some new props that's been added, and they have raided the vault. They pulled out the these gargoyles that used to be part of the set of the Ghostbusters Spooktacular, where I used to work. They've got some other Ghostbusters props. They've got this tribute to E.T. that's like a model of E.T. dressed up for Halloween with a sheet over him.
It's so cute.
They've got all these plaques with, you know, mentions of old rides that aren't there again, and information and photographs, even pieces of concept models. They've got this gorgeous framed concept model of Hogwarts Castle, and it's even slightly different from what actually got built, so it's just fascinating to look at it up close. My thing is that Universal has always been all about whatever's new, whatever's fresh, and they've been very kind of disrespectful of the past, of their own history. You know, they're always so willing to tear everything out and just, you know, forget about it. And I think now they realize that there's value in nostalgia, and there's people who like grew up with the, you know, the 90s and remember, you know, the Alfred Hitchcock show or the Jaws and Back to the Future. And that's like marketable. And the fact that they are obviously investing, it's not just, you know, merchandise that they've slapped in there, but really putting work into making this as much of a museum as a store makes me really happy. I grin so much when I walk in there. Every time I go in now, I have to stop in and take pictures because they just keep adding new stuff.
Yeah, I think the last, I watch vlogs to keep up with everything in the parks when I'm not there. I think the last one I saw, the fly capsule thing had been moved in there.
Yes, and the transformation pod from the end of the original horror makeup show before they put Eddie the Wolfman in. And what I really love, the newest thing I saw was the costume that Arnold Schwarzenegger wore for the Terminator 2 film that used to be in the gift shop at the end of Terminator. When that turned into Bourne Stuntacular, that kind of disappeared, and I'm so glad they found a new place for that.
And lots of pictures from Back to the Future, the ride, and I think there's a yellow barrel in there. Not sure if it was used with the Jaws ride, but man, so cool. I honestly, if they ever opened a museum,
and beyond, that would be awesome. Beyond the artifacts, they've also got a video wall that scrolls with old pictures. They even had a digital reproduction of the Universal Studios Escape logo and map. For a hot minute, Universal was called Universal Studios Escape, and that did not last long for good reason. But there was a whole marketing campaign. It was a thing for about a year. And they even have on the audio, they have a bit of the old WJWS Amityville or Amity radio station to listen to. So yeah. Go, if you're an old school Universal fan, spend some time there. I've probably spent more time on this one news story talking about this than everything else because I was so excited by it.
Yeah, it's nice to see Universal showing some love to the old school stuff. Nintendo is nice, Harry Potter is nice, but man, what I would give to be able to ride some of these older rides that went away before I made my way to Orlando.
Yep.
Over in California, we have the full, updated, entire guidelines for reopening.
And literally
California.
Not like 72 hours too soon, because this is all effective April 1st.
Yes.
And this stuff, like, yeah, rolled out like three days in advance. Yeah.
So there are a bunch of rules. I'll give you the basics. So there's a set of rules that applies to all theme parks in all counties, no matter what tier of COVID spread they're at. And then there are rules that slightly differ depending on what tier the county is in. Keep in mind that purple, which is tier one, is the worst level of spread, and they are not allowed to reopen the parks. They have to be in at least tier two, which is code red or the color red. But various rules that apply to everybody include theme parks have to develop a weekly optional COVID-19 testing thing for their employees, which I think is nice. Face coverings are mandatory as far as indoor and outdoor facilities unless actively eating or drinking. Those who do not follow the rule, and this is a quote from the release itself because I found it and read all 13 pages, should be removed from the facility immediately. which I've found very spicy.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Get out. Though they do have some exceptions as far as who does not have to wear face masks and things, which is a whole other document in itself, but I linked it in the original story if you want to check it out in case it applies to you. Performers and employees working in entertainment who can't work without wearing a face covering are not required to wear one so long as they're doing those activities where they can't wear the face covering. But the unmasked performer has to stay at least 6 feet away from other people, and all unmasked performers and workers have to get tested at least twice a week for COVID.
Mm-hmm. I think the rule that impacts you and me most directly is that only in-state visitors are allowed to attend the parks. So if you've been listening to all this and you think that doesn't sound that bad, unless you live in California, don't start buying your ticket. Because that the number one rule is that you must live in California. The parks must have some way of checking when they purchase your ticket to ensure that everyone attending does live in California. And also, don't even if you live in California, don't expect to think you're going to have a family reunion, because they're limiting to a maximum of 3 households, and they basically want small groups of people who already know each other, to the point where they're going to collect everyone's name and address when you buy a ticket. Don't think that you're gonna take a little vacation from the East Coast over to California and check out Disneyland, because it's not happening yet.
And that seems to be for contact tracing reasons, which are explained later on in the various rules for tiers. All queues have to be outdoors. Indoor rides can't be longer than 15 minutes. Members of the same household are supposed to be boarded on the same ride vehicle together, and those from different households must be at least 6 feet apart. So you won't be riding in ride vehicles with people you don't know that aren't in your bubble.
Now, if we're going to talk specifically about Disneyland, which we will pretty soon.
Yeah.
That 15 minute, I think that they can bump up against that on Pirates and on It's a Small World, especially depending on how many boats are in the trough, how fast they're unloading. You can easily get backed up and spend more than 15 minutes in a boat of Pirates or Small World in Disneyland.
Yeah.
So that might be a tricky one.
Then parks will have to shut down rides or attractions where using a face covering is a safety issue or high incidence of loss.
Now, I will say I have ridden the Hulk. I have ridden Rip Ride Rocket. I even did a Mako over at SeaWorld. I have not lost a face mask yet. If you've got a properly secured face mask, I think pretty much any thrill ride that's in definitely the Disney parks, and maybe there's something that's, you know, maybe that Superman ride at Six Flags, that one will blow your mask off. But
yeah, I can't, if it's like secured, if it has like adjustable ear loops
on there, you should be fine.
And then this other one I found really interesting is that concession stands must be accompanied by additional designated and shaded areas.
I hope they mandate that they keep that, because I think all the parks need more shaded areas where we can sit and eat.
What are the limits of this rule? Every churro stand have to have seating now?
Yes. Obviously some of these are not defined specifically enough to really enforce. But it definitely shows you what kind of things that they are looking for. And, you know, I don't know what kind of enforcement mechanism, if the state is going to be able to send inspectors in, if they're going to be able to fine parks or shut parks down. But I would expect that the bigger operators are going to, follow these rules, the spirit of them and the letter of them as closely as possible.
Yeah. And then once you get to the various rules for the tiers, the main thing you want to pay attention to is capacity. So if your county of choice that your theme park is in the red tier. You can only have visitors up to 15% of your maximum capacity, which isn't a lot.
That's, if I could be in Disneyland in a day when it is limited at 15% capacity, I would pay a lot of money for that experience. Because that sounds like
heaven.
That sounds like VIP. Everyone is a VIP.
Oh, yeah.
From what I've been hearing, they're hoping to be in the orange tier when they open up at the end of April. I think right now they would qualify for the red, but
yeah.
Looking like by the end of the month, they'll be the orange tier, which is a 23% capacity. Or, sorry, 25% capacity.
Yeah. And then for red, indoor capacity has to be limited to 15%, and no indoor dining is allowed.
Yeah, that's really rough.
Yeah.
Managing theme park crowds without being able to use any of your indoor dining facilities, that's tough.
Yeah. And then in orange tier, as Seth said before, capacity is limited to 25%. Mm-hmm. Indoor capacity jumps up to 25%. Mm-hmm. And then indoor dining is permitted but limited to that maximum 25% capacity. And then for yellow tier, which is minimal COVID spread as far as the severity of it, theme parks can operate at 35% capacity, with indoor capacity staying at 25% and indoor dining bumped up to 50% capacity. And then all three tiers have to, they are able to do walk-up ticket sales, but the parks will have to get your full lineup of information, your name, contact info, address, et cetera, et cetera, for contact tracing purposes.
Yeah, so it definitely will not be business as usual. They will not just be throwing open the gates and inviting everyone in, but you know, at least we got a blueprint. We've got a game plan, which is more than they've had in California for a while.
Yeah. While it's unfortunate that we can't go, I will be interested to watch all my favorite Disneyland vloggers try to navigate all of these rules when the park opens on April 30th.
Thoughts and prayers to all of you who are there on April 30th.
Yep. Peace and love. We're wishing you all the best. And then this last one, before we get to the main attraction, I've been seeing some mixed reactions. Magic Kingdom is currently doing a month-long facial recognition entry test at Magic Kingdom. So until April 23rd, guests can volunteer if they would like to have their faces scanned with their masks on in order to tie it to their entry to the park to make it a more hands-free experience.
So it's important to note that it is clearly marked. It is clearly optional.
Yeah.
If you're into technology and you want to contribute to the inevitable takeover of our robot overlords, go for it. What I really want to know is how Disney has the ability to read my face with a mask on when my expensive new iPhone cannot do that with Face ID. I cannot recognize people with their mask on. That I have known for 20 years, I have no idea. All I see is a little strip here. But Disney, apparently, they no problem. They know.
This is the question I've been asking since this test started. How are they able to tell? Is it the eyes?
It's incredible. Like, I mean, if they can really do facial right, first of all, that I think that would be very concerning to like privacy advocates and people who are in like protest movements. If they can now identify you down just from your eyes, that's
crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to participate in this test, then I don't think they're not also taking blood from you or,
no.
or DNA or and no anything else no.
Yeah.
No, you just have to face the camera and while tapping your Magic Band. Presumably then you can go through a second time and it should hopefully recognize you, or maybe you were just helping to train it. I'm not sure that it actually improves the speed for the user at this point. I think you're just kind of providing data to them, but not necessarily getting anything in return.
Yeah, they have asked that if you do volunteer to do the facial recognition tech, that you continue to use that entrance through the duration of the test if you're visiting over a period of days. Mm-hmm. And when you walk up, they'll have you, if you're wearing a hat, you'll have to take it off. If you have sunglasses on, you'll have to take those off, though they didn't specify about eyeglasses, so I think those are okay.
So presumably after 3 or 4 scans, they will have enough data to replicate you and then send that replicant out in the world, maybe to work as a low-paid employee in one of the parks.
Wouldn't that be crazy? You go.
Well, they,
to...
you know, the college program is suspended. They don't have the international workers. They've got to fill, you know, their housing some way. So
the Disney clone program.
Maybe this is the day. Yes, this is absolutely part of the Disney clone program.
And this test runs through April 23rd, and images taken during the test will not be shared with third parties, nor will the unique numbers that they will be digitized into in order to link them to your admission. And then 30 days after the test ends, so May 23rd, after that date, all images and captured information will be discarded. So.
Yes, and all your memories of the experience will also be erased.
Yeah.
Much like Men in Black.
Yeah,
I've been on that ride hundreds of times, but I never remember the ending. I don't know what happens.
It's weird. And then somehow you make it back out to the front of the ride. How do they do that?
So strange.
Bringing you your top news story of the week, whether from your backyard or from around the world, it's time for the main attraction.
But drum roll, this week's main attraction is Disneyland's maybe expansion kind of Disney Springs thing. Disneyland Forward.
I got to have been out of the loop. Maybe I've just been focused on other stuff. Usually when something of this size is coming up, there are little whispers. There are hints. I didn't really know this was coming until it dropped in my lap.
I thought it was fake.
it was so, when I started seeing people talking about it, was so outlandish. They're like, no, someone made the, no, they just out of nowhere, just no warm up, just boom, there you go.
Yeah, it was crazy. I saw it on Twitter first, and then I was like, what? Disneyland opening a third gate? That's garbage.
Well,
that's not-
and that is garbage. Let's make very clear. So this is, Disneyland has proposed a new expansion idea under the branding Disneyland Forward. It is 100% not a third theme park. If you have seen any clickbait articles, any headlines that told you it was a third theme park, they did not read the document, which clearly says in the question answer section, this is not a third gate. This is not a third theme park. This is a major expansion of Disneyland and California Adventure, accompanied with a new use of land that they already own for what could be themed entertainment, but is not a whole new theme park equivalent to Disneyland. It'd be more like a Disney Springs with a Disney Quest. That would be a better way of thinking of it.
So,
if you thought of Disney Quest as an indoor theme park, then yeah, they're building a theme park, but it's not a theme park. It's more like location-based entertainment and retail hotel experiences.
Yeah.
But the most important thing to remember all of this is it's not even an announcement. It's not a plan. It's not an opening year. It's not an opening date. It's not an opening century. It's a really vague concept idea that pretty much just exists to get the Anaheim officials on board with letting Disney do whatever.
Yeah.
Disneyland, they own their own property, but it is zoned by the city. And they have certain areas where they are only allowed to have parking. They have certain areas where they're only allowed to have hotels. There are certain areas where they are allowed to build theme parks. And they have always been kind of annoyed at being told by anyone else what to do with their own land. Now, the people who are living directly across the street from Disneyland property are probably pretty happy about the fact that Disney can't do whatever they want and can't necessarily build a roller coaster across this from their front lawn. Disney has long wanted to sort of have the same kind of freedom in their Anaheim property that they do in Orlando. In Orlando, they've got the Reedy Creek District, and they basically make their own zoning. And so in Anaheim, they basically want the Anaheim City Council to say, okay, we trust you guys to do whatever you want within your own, you know, current existing boundaries. So take every piece of concept art, every plan, every idea that you have heard associated with this with a grain of salt, like bigger than the petrified tree that Walt gave to Lillian for their anniversary. Like the biggest grain of salt ever. I think the funniest thing about this whole plan is that if you read Disney's website, if you read the document, there are three distinct plans. They tell you in text what the attractions that are going to be there, and they talk about taking Tangled and Frozen and Tron, basically cherry picking the Asian parks and taking the best of all of the Asian parks and sticking out there. That's plan number one. That's in the text. Plan number two, if you look at the overhead concept artwork, if you were to scroll to the top of our article, that is some really vague pictures of mountains and rivers, and there's no Tron coaster in there. There is no Frozen Arendelle in there. So none of this stuff that they talk about in that text is actually in that piece of artwork. The most interesting piece of artwork to me is if you look at the site plan, and this is the top-down view that looks like a construction document. And if you were to look at, scroll in and look at the high-res version of that one, you see some really interesting stuff. You see that California Adventure, the middle of the California Adventure expansion, is an exact copy of Pandora at Animal Kingdom. You see that what's at the top looks suspiciously like the big panther statue from the entrance of Wakanda from the Black Panther movies. And you see a mountain with what looks like a roller coaster track going in and out of it for a flying coaster that could make like a great Raya the Last Dragon ride. But those are also things that we've never seen concept art for. They've never pitched those before. So you've got three radically different ideas of what they could do with that expansion. And the only thing that they all have in common is that they're not a new park. They are expansions to California Adventure and Disneyland. Disneyland, basically, it looks like there'd be a new entrance behind New Orleans Square. It basically looks like you would tunnel out the west side of the park between New Orleans Square and Critter Country and go either under or over Disneyland Drive to get to it. And then for California Adventure, it looks like it would punch through where the parades enter Paradise Pier. So I guess it might be a little difficult to do a parade there. But the cool thing is that these new attractions all wrap around Paradise Pier Hotel and Disneyland Hotel. So it basically turns those two hotels, which have always been kind of far away from the action, into right like MiraCosta at Tokyo Disneyland. Like they're right, it's like you're staying inside a theme park suddenly.
Yeah.
And it would turn Paradise Pier into what is probably the worst Disney-owned hotel in terms of, you know, location and amenities for the price, into one of the best ones.
Yeah, I've made that walk.
It sucks.
There are
like $99 motels on Harbor Boulevard that are half the walk of the Paradise Pier to the front gates of the park. But if Paradise Pier was literally surrounded by Wakanda, like. I'd stay there.
Yeah. And then they also have a conceptual Disney Springs-esque thing down here as well. or is that just a zoomed
yes.
in thing?
So,
there?
No, that in the lower right hand corner. So that is where we currently have the Toy Story lot. If you are a local, you know that the Mickey and Friends parking garage is just hell to get in and out of. So you take a different exit off of the 5 and you park in Toy Story lot, which is so much better in terms of transportation. Well, this gets rid of the Toy Story lot. So obviously this is kind of contingent on them building that new parking structure at the Eastern Gateway that they were going to build and then got canceled. And then where the Toy Story lot was, now you have what looks like a West Coast Disney Springs. You've got, you know, dining, you've got shopping. If you scroll into, there's one building that is marked as theme park experience. That's when I reference mm-hmm. Disney Quest, some sort of indoor location based, something unique that is, you know, a themed, maybe a ticketed attraction, but not an entire theme park. And then all of this, of course, would have really good walking access to Catella and Harbor Boulevard. And, you know, the final piece in all this would be if they would finally just buy the Garden Walk. Anaheim Garden Walk is yeah. the most underutilized piece of real estate. It's, you know, perpetually like on the verge of being a zombie mall. And it lies directly in between this new Disney Springs project on the Toy Story lot and where they want to put that parking hub. So it would, you know, it would finally, it would make the Disneyland Resort a lot more like Universal Orlando Resort, where you have, you know, the theme parks and the hotels really closely integrated and very walkable. But this is not happening this year. This is probably not happening this decade. if you're worrying that, you know, well, they can't pick that attraction or this attraction because it has a non-compete clause with Tokyo, whatever is in Tokyo will have probably been open for 10 years before any of this gets open. So, yeah. You know, this is what's going to happen in probably the late 2020s at the earliest, more like this is what's the 2030s look like. If we're lucky.
If we're lucky. Yeah. Oof. And all of this is just nice, pretty diagrams and suggestions just to get Anaheim to agree.
Right. This is about, if anything, this is about building public sentiment and public pressure on, because, you know, Disney has had a very contentious relationship with Anaheim government. Most recently, they were going to build a luxury hotel that, you know, they had were getting a big tax break for building a luxury hotel. And then the new members of the commission came in and said, "Oh, we're not so happy about that." So they said, "So we're not building that luxury hotel." And that turned into an expansion of the Disneyland Hotel, which I don't believe has officially been canceled yet, but I'm not entirely sure how it fits into these plans. I have to pull out a magnifying glass and some blueprints to figure out, you know, how that will all work out. But yeah, this is about Disney trying to say, "Hey, we want to do all sorts of cool stuff if only the government would let us." And they make a big point of saying we're not asking for money, and they're not. They're not asking for more land. They're not asking for, you know, a tax break. They're just asking for zoning permission. But it has to be said that, you know, zoning exists for a reason. And even though regulations can be annoying to corporations, they're usually exist for some purpose. So we'll see how willing the Anaheim Council is to roll over. My gut feeling says that if it hadn't been for the pandemic, Anaheim commissioners would probably play hardball. But their tax, you know, their tax revenue has dropped so precipitously in this year. You know, they're in desperate straits with their budgets, just like every city across the country. Mm-hmm. And Disney is their cash cow. I mean, that's the thing that brings people to their town. And so I think they're going to do anything they can to play nice with Disney, especially since it doesn't involve them having to give Disney anything monetarily.
Yeah. I also found it a little, like, kind of hardball, as you said. On the website, if you go check it out, they it says in the FAQ that these updated approvals are necessary as they would allow Disney to explore and add new theme park attractions without having to remove and replace treasure rides and attractions.
Ding, ding, ding. This is basically Disney saying, you know, do you love Dumbo? Do you want to save It's a Small World? You know, we don't want to kill the tiki birds. Don't make me kill the tiki bird.
That's a real nice Small World.
I don't want to. That's a real. That's a real nice Mr. Toad you got there. Shame what happened to his cousin in Florida. Wouldn't want anything to happen to that Mr. Toad you got there, would you?
Yeah, that's what it felt like. I was like, ooh, okay.
Yep. Well, I mean, it is true. They're very constricted on space, and they've pretty much maxed out. Once Mickey's Runaway Railway is installed out there, they're pretty much out to the limits. So, there are some things that could go away. I did think it was really interesting that the monorail is still pictured on this new concept art. It's not entirely clear if there is a monorail station for the Disneyland Hotel or downtown Disney area like there currently is. The station itself seems to be gone in some of that artwork, but the monorail in some form looks like will still exist because really Disneyland Park, the only spot left to really redevelop is taking out the subs and the Autopia and the monorail. If you're gonna build stuff, that's pretty much what you got left, and the old motorboat cruise landing. Other than that, yeah, this is really their only way to expand the borders of the parks. So yeah, I mean it's exciting, but this was basically meant to get fans and supporters riled up and jazzed up and getting them calling the Anaheim commissioners. It should not expect to be riding any of these attractions in the near future.
Yeah. And what gets people more riled up than headlines that say third gate at Disneyland?
Absolutely.
Proposed.
Even when
it's not true.
It literally says this is not a new... This is an expansion. Oy, oy. Reading is fundamental, folks.
Yeah, especially for this. That website is packed with information. And I can't tell you how many times they say this is not a proposal for a new theme park.
It is both packed with information and amazingly vague and contradictory.
Yes.
Good luck. I mean, you could study that like the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know.
Forever and ever. But here's
Look
hoping
at this. We are dead on one.
Yeah,
this is brilliant. We are good.
And before we go, I have some listener thank yous to share this week. In case you did not know, Attractions Magazine has a 4-tier subscription service. And if you pick Club or VIP the week after you subscribe, we give you a shout out on the Attractions podcast. So big applause and thank yous to Elisa Aviles, sorry, I almost said Alves, Erica Fleeman, Stephanie Fieldhouse, Scott Jansen, and Doug Bain. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And our spring 2021 issue is available now. I got mine in the mail today, along with this, which I was super excited about. Thanks, Matt.
You are all set for Japan.
I am jealous. Yeah, I'll go in a million years from now.
I got a rock. I got nothing in my mailbox.
I got a rock.
Well, this is my favorite part of the show because this is where I get to remind everyone that it is now time for you to go onto Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us, or as they now call it, follow us. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And share us, please, all your friends. Tell everyone, because we want to share the goodness of Attractions Magazine podcast, Attractions Magazine YouTube, all of our wonderful channels with everyone. Brittany, why don't you tell them where they can find all that wonderful information?
You can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me at Skubersky at the UG series on Twitter and Instagram or on theunofficialguides.com.
And you can find all things attractions at attractionsmagazine.com, at attractions on Twitter, at attractionsmagazine on Instagram, and youtube.com/attractionsmagazine, where you've been hanging out with us for the past hour.
That was super smooth. That was almost like I was reading my script for a change.
That was, and we don't even have a script written.
We got notes. Google document. We are all sorts of professional here.
That was great. And it'll never happen again.
Never again.
And until next week, I hope you guys stay safe, wear your mask, get vaccinated if you can, and have fun.
Tuesday.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.